Listen. Can you hear them? Voices. A multitude of voices. Some whispering, some shouting, and some even screaming.
Listen to them.
They all have something to say. Don't listen too closely. You might not like what you hear.
Broken Sea Audio Productions presents the third annual Halloween audio season. Voices in the Dead of Night. Coming October 2009 to BrokenSea.com.
Hi, I'm Big Anklevich.
And I'm Rish Outfield.
And that's R080T.
We're your hosts for the Doonstief Audio Fiction Magazine.
On the Doonstief, we read science fiction, fantasy, and horror stories.
What did he say?
He says that you're a loser. If you've never listened to the Doonstief, you don't know what you're missing.
Stupid, worthless robot. Why don't we play them a sample?
Yeah, 080T, can you play that story sample? Javi slid the crystal into place. His accomplice fiddled with some knobs, and the spaceship came alive with a quiet whirr. Outside, the guards were scrambling, confused at the ring of rolling blue fire that built under the machine. The wooden mounts vaporized and the ground blackened. The accomplice spoke.
Is it a go?
Yes,
Javi said. He turned on the space barrier and pulled the throttle. It shot upwards, crashing through the ceiling, leaving the guards on the ground pointing and shaking their heads. Thanks, 080T.
After the story, there's witty banter and discussion from the hosts. What did he say this time?
He says you're a loser. The best part about the discussion is that it's at the end, so it's easy just to skip it.
Right, so come check out the Doonstief Audio Fiction Magazine.
Find us at www.doonstief.com.
That's Doonstief. What did he say? That I'm a loser?
No, he said that if you check out the Doonstief, you'll be glad that you did. Huh. And he said that you're a loser.
Friggin' robot!
Halloween world domination continues. First Grendad, then Mark Kalita. I need a trusted sidekick. Okara!
Draven, what do you want, sis?
Grendad wants me to finish my homework.
Because.
Why?
Because. You did what?
Mark Kalita, too? Does it mean we can stay up as long as we want now? Is that a TARDIS?
Yep. Come with me. I have a plan.
What plan?
Ever wanted to be a real Dalek?
You can do that?
With Mark Kalita's TARDIS, anything is possible. Come on. Olive's right here.
ring the doorbell.
I can't. All I have is a sucker thing and a gun. And I have the urge to say, exterminate! Exterminate!
Shh!
Damaris and Paul will hear you.
Paul?
Someone's at the door.
Who is it, Damaris?
Looks like... Windows need cleaning, Paul.
Sorry, sweetie. Who is it?
Draven and,
pizza delivery.
A Dalek delivering pizza.
I didn't order pizza.
We didn't order pizza!
Doesn't mean that we won't take it.
We don't take pizza from strangers, Paul. We've had this discussion.
It was once, Damaris.
Candygram.
I didn't order a candygram. Did you order a candygram?
We didn't order a candygram!
Are we allowed to take candygrams from strangers? Draven? Where's Bill? And what are you doing here with a Dalek, Draven?
Mama!
I don't need a what?
Howie Swagcast World Domination Chore.
What? Where's Bill?
First my granddad, Bill Hollick, then Mark Alita.
How?
I thought I recognized Max Tartus.
What are you doing here with a Dalek, Draven?
Who's the Dalek?
Kyra the Dalek 2.0.
I thought the Dalek looked familiar, but...
No buts. Kyra?
Rachel!
Now, while Kyra the Dalek 2.0 cleans up this New Zealand mess, I present some Masters of Horror for your ears, my hooligan creepazoids. Vincent Price, Boris Karloff, Bela Lugosi, John Carradine, and the Denwich Horror. Mwah! Ha 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 ha!
Vampires, werewolves, ghouls, ghosts, mummies that come back to life after 3,000 years. Can such things be? Well, I've spent a lifetime doing my best to persuade you, at least for an hour or two in a darkened theater, that there are things that go bump in the night and raise a lump in your throat, a hard knot of terror. A number of my fellow actors, Bela Lugosi, Peter Lorre, Vincent Price, Miss Elsa Lanchester, to name only a few, have helped me in this persuasion. It is my pleasure to share with you memorable passages which historians have come to regard as classics of terror. Many of the most eloquent moments in these so-called monster movies, of course, were played completely in pantomime. For example, I didn't have a word of dialogue in the original Frankenstein. And my most chilling scene in The Mummy was entirely speechless. The sequence when I, as Imhotep, was reawakening to life after 3,700 years dead in the dust of Egypt. But I hope that some of these excerpts you're about to hear will serve to conjure up visions for you once again of the magic moments of terror in these classic tales.
Ironized Yeast presents Lights Out, Everybody.
It is later than you think.
Lights Out brings you stories of the supernatural and the supernormal, dramatizing the fantasies and the mysteries, the unknown. We tell you this frankly, so if you wish to avoid the excitement and tension of these imaginative plays, we urge you calmly but sincerely to turn off your radio now.
My name, Arch Obler. Tonight, another in our series of tales of the weird and the unusual. And this one is really unusual. It's about that little god of chance, the one who flips a coin and makes us rich men or beggar men. But before we start, Frank Martin has something to say to you.
And I'd like to suggest, friends, that success isn't all a matter of luck or chance. No, success depends largely on you yourself. You can't hope to get ahead if you're miserably thin and tired and nervous. But you needn't necessarily go on feeling that way. If your trouble is vitamin B and iron shortage, then take ironized yeast tablets. They give you both vitamin B and iron. Thus, when you need them, help two ways to build you up. Help two ways to restore strength and pep. Men and women by the thousands who only needed more vitamin B and iron say, thanks to ironized yeast, they've gained new vigor, new weight, and strength, often in a few weeks. That's right, ironized yeast tablets. All druggists have them. And now, lights out, everybody.
You say the world is planned. I say the world is chance.
Sailing, sailing over the bounding main.
Cut it out, Laura, cut it out. You're rocking the boat.
Babe, this is really fun.
Will you quit doing the Big Apple? This ain't Roxy's. This is a canoe.
Smell that air. Isn't it just terrific?
Yeah, there's too much of it.
Dottie Nelson, don't you talk that way. You know mighty well we came out here to get healthy.
All right. So I'll get healthy even if it kills me.
Sure was a funny way to pick out a place to go on a vacation, wasn't it? Eeny, meeny, miny, moe.
Yeah, and this place was moe. Well, what if we'd picked out Alaska or Cicero or someplace like that? At least this way
we... Oh, Daddy, look.
Look at what?
On the shore over there, all those big flowers.
Flowers? Oh, for Pete's sake, the way you were wiggling, I thought it was Indian.
Come on, let's go pick them.
Okay, by me, as long as you do the paddling. Hey, look out, Girl Scout, you're driving over the curb.
Land ho!
Oh, hey, you tear the bottom out of this battleship and we'll have to pay for it.
Oh, I didn't hurt it. Come on, get out and help me pick these posies.
All right. As long as there's no keep off the grass signs.
Dottie Nelson, will you get it through that head of yours that this ain't Central Park? This is honest to gosh wilderness.
Says you. Make mine vanilla with onions.
Aren't they just the loveliest flowers you ever saw?
Two bits were right in the middle of some poison ivy.
Hey, look.
What?
The boat, it's drifting off.
Well, catch it, quick.
What do you mean, catch it? I can't swim.
Dot, do something. Do something. Don't just stand
don't
there.
Don't you yell at me. You're the one to blame. You should have pulled the boat higher out of the water.
Oh, Dot, what'll we do? They'll make us pay for it.
Who cares about the boat? I'm worried about us.
Us?
Yes. How are we going to get back to that camp?
Well, we can walk.
Oh, you sure must have strained your brain thinking up that one.
Oh, you needn't get so fresh about it. You certainly don't think I wanted the boat to...
All right, let's hang up the boxing gloves and get out of here.
Dot.
Huh?
How dark it's getting.
So what?
Why is it getting so dark?
Listen, lame brain. I may be just a hillbilly from 10th Avenue, but I know clouds when I see them. So they're clouds, you know. Clouds, rain, remember?
I'm scared.
Oh, what have you got to be scared about all of a sudden? Come on. I'll get you back to camp.
No. Wait, Dot.
Huh?
That's not the way. We gotta go the other way.
Listen, lame brain, I'll do the pathfinding.
But you're wrong. You're all mixed up. It's the other way.
Is that a path or isn't it?
But there's a path going the other way.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, what'll we do?
You go one way and I'll go the other.
Oh, no, we won't. I'm scared. We'll stick together.
Okay, we'll flip for it as usual. I had a nickel. Oh, yeah, here it is. Heads, we take the right-hand path. Tails, we take the left-hand path.
All right.
Okay, call it.
Heads.
Heads it is. Okay, Girl Scout, lead the way.
No, you go first.
Okay, but if this path leads up to the middle of nowhere, so help me, I'm going to pull you apart like a herring.
So dark.
Keep moving.
Wait, Dot.
What's the matter now? Some more posy?
Listen. You hear it?
So help me, a fiddle.
I told you we were heading the right
way.
Will
you turn over that I told you so record and keep moving? I'm hungry. Keep moving.
All right.
Keep moving.
Okay.
Well, this must be the front door of the joint.
What that? How funny.
Oh, what's funny now? That's pretty music.
The place hasn't any windows.
The door's all I care about.
You think we ought to disturb whoever's playing?
Disturb is right one side, Lady Gwendolyn. I'll do the knocking.
Doesn't seem to hear us.
Oh, he'll hear me. There, that did it.
It's awful thrilling, isn't it?
Okay, you do the thrilling and you'll do the paying if they can't find that boat. Of all the donkeys.
How do you do?
Oh, how do you do? We're sorry to bust in like this.
We sort of lost our way. I mean, our boat, and we thought maybe you could tell us...
Of course, of course. Won't you step in? I'm more than glad to see you.
Well...
Of course we will. Come on, Di.
Okay.
It's going to rain.
Yeah, we found that out.
We certainly were lucky to find this place. We heard you playing the violin.
Now, did you really? If you'll step this way.
Oh, Dot, isn't he the strangest man?
Yeah. Turned his face away.
He must be terribly ugly.
Oh, forget it. Go on, keep moving.
If you'll step in here, I have a small fire going.
Kind of dark.
Yeah.
If you'll do me the honor of being seated.
All right.
Oh, boy, what a chair.
Yes, it's most comfortable. Now, if I might be permitted to introduce myself. I'm John Boyd.
I'm pleased to meet you, Mr. Boyd. I'm Laura, and she's Dottie.
Don't believe me, mister. It's a pleasure. Do my dogs hurt?
May I sit and talk with you? There's so very much to talk about.
Well, we should be getting back to camp.
Oh, we got plenty of time. And anyway, mister, you don't know what a lifesaver you were.
Was I? Really?
Anything gets Laura scared is to be in the dark.
All those rain clouds.
And then I must apologize for not having more light here. You see, my eyes...
Oh, that's all right, mister,
Boy.
I never could remember names. I guess I don't really mind it being dark in here. It's sort of like a nice tea room.
Really?
Don't mind her, Mr. Boyd. She was hit on the head by a bowling ball when very young.
Oh, now, Dad.
Will you listen to that wind?
The storm will come in just a few more moments.
Gives me the willies.
Is... your wife home, Mr. Boyd?
I'm quite alone.
Sure must get lonely out here.
It was. Very lonely.
Getting awful dark in here, isn't it?
The storm...
What's that?
Oh, don't be alarmed. A door banging in the wind. If you'll excuse me for just a moment, I'll fix it.
Okay. Okay.
Dad. Huh? Let's get out of here.
Oh, why?
You're scared, too.
Oh, I'm not scared. You look so funny and shadowy in the dark.
Dad, huh? What's that funny smell?
Yeah, I noticed it. Like medicine.
He walks and holds his head so funny.
Now, why does he keep away from the light of the fire?
Let's get out of here.
Yeah, okay. We'll make a run for it before the rain starts.
I suggest you stay. Yes, I suggest you stay.
Come on, Dad.
You'd better stay, my dear. The storm, it's close at hand.
Yeah? Well, something tells me I'd rather be out there than in here.
Me too.
Well, be seeing you. Come on, Laura.
Okay.
Mister?
Yeah?
Hey, mister, the door's locked.
I know it.
You know it? Hey, listen, it's a big idea locking that door on us.
You let us out of here, mister.
Mr. Boyd, or whatever your name is, didn't you hear me? What's a big idea locking the door?
I have some very interesting things to talk about with both of you.
We want to get out of here.
Come on, unlock the door.
We'll scream our heads off.
There's no one around for 15 miles.
Are you going to open that door?
I suggest you sit down.
Give us that key. Now open that door. I tell you.
God. Why did you?
Sorry, I had to do that. I'm really a very gentle man.
Oh, now, Dot, honey, please don't cry. I'm scared. Please stop crying. Please.
I think we'll understand each other quite clearly now, won't we? Sit down. Sit down, the both of you. Sit down, I say. There. Now that we understand each other so clearly, we can talk with each other quietly now, can't we? You know, I dislike loud talking intensely. You see, I'm really a very gentle man.
Please, Dot, don't cry anymore.
That's excellent advice, my dear Laura, excellent advice. Dottie, I suggest you stop crying.
Dot, please, do as he says. I'm all right.
Of course, you're quite all right. Now, where was I? Oh, yes. Let me tell you of Chance. Here I was, a quiet, contented man, sitting here all alone, and yet I was not quite content. Chance brought you here to me, and Chance found me quite discontented. As a man of thorough saneness, as a man of infinite realism, I realize that this fortuitous circumstance of our meeting, fanciful as it might have been, is a welcome opportunity for me.
Opportunity? For what?
To fill my loneliness permanently. To get myself a wife.
Wife? Dad, he is crazy.
I suggest, my dear Laura, that you substitute another word, a kindlier one than the one you're using. Oh. Yes, I said, a wife.
Laura, oh, we wouldn't make good wives. Honestly, we wouldn't. We're just a couple of kids, aren't we, Dad?
We make all for hard work. Oh, mister, have a heart, will you? Open the door and let us out of here.
We'll keep our mouths shut. I swear we will.
Mr. Boyd, please. Please. Mr. Boyd, will you...
Have you quite finished? Then here's my answer. One of you becomes my bride. Oh, yes, my bride. I'm leaving this place shortly. When we reach our destination, one of you will become my wife. Oh, very legally.
One of us?
I marry only one.
Then what about the other?
To the ordinary man, that would be quite a problem now, wouldn't it? But to me, well, I told you I'm a realist, so the answer is quite simple. I marry one, and the other...
The other?
The other dies.
Ladies and gentlemen, two girls apparently are forced to decide between the being who calls himself a gentle man, and death, a most difficult choice to make. But before it takes place in tonight's exciting lights-out tale, a deep breath to slow up at least my racing pulse, and a moment more to consider another matter before we return to the story of Vals Triste. It's a matter that's facing many an American today. Listen.
Gosh, they say I'm too old to fight, and it's beginning to look like I'm even too old for this war job of mine. Boy, I can't eat or sleep. Losing weight, getting more jittery and worn out every day. I sure am discouraged.
Whoa there, don't be so quick to blame your age or your job. Maybe you simply need more vitamin B and iron. You see, when you don't get enough vitamin B from your meals, you may lose your appetite, not eat enough to maintain normal weight and strength. And when you don't get enough iron from your food, you may be weak, washed out, feel only half alive.
Well, if I do need more vitamin B and iron, how can I get them?
The easiest way I know is take ironized yeast tablets. These pleasant little tablets are a cinch to use. They cost but a few pennies a day, and they give you both vitamin B and iron. That's why ironized yeast tablets have worked such wonders for thousands who only needed more of these substances. Quickly help them regain their old-time pep and strength, and 5, 10, even more pounds of good new flesh. So try ironized yeast tablets, if more vitamin B and iron is what you need. Then see if soon you aren't saying,
who said I'm a has-been? Why, I've got pep to burn these days. I look like a new man with the pounds I've gained, and a promotion wouldn't surprise me one bit. Why didn't somebody tell me about ironized yeast tablets sooner?
And now back to Lights Out. The two girls have heard the choice. One is to live, one is to die. And their hysteria has grown with the terror in them.
Are you quite through, my dear? How unfortunate. And after I told you how much I disliked loud talking.
Don't hurt him, please, mister.
Hurt you? Oh, haven't I told you? I'm really a very gentle man. Oh, yes, much too gentle.
What? What are you going to do?
Now, why do you ask that?
The way you look at it.
I'm trying to decide which one shall live and which one shall die.
You wouldn't kill us?
Oh, just one, my dear, just one.
Oh, you wouldn't dare. We could both stay with you.
I marry one, the other die.
Mr. Listen, my family, they've got money. Lots of
now,
it.
Now, just a moment, my dear, just a moment. Money to me?
Well...
And what will I do with it? Oh, no, one of you must die, and this is quite as good a time as any other.
No, no.
You look so amusing. Backs against the wall. Skin on your faces tight with fright. So white, so fresh and young. And yet, believe me, there's nothing to be afraid of.
You wouldn't kill me. I don't want to die.
Oh, it isn't a matter of want, my dear. It's a matter of judicious selection, like nature itself. You see, sitting out here, I've had a chance to watch nature and understand her. She's very gentle, just like I am. And yet she's quite a realist. Two rabbits run before the fox, one to the right, one to the left. The fox follows one and kills. But which one? It's all a matter of chance. With gentle nature herself, the chooser. And I shall choose between you two.
Oh, die, I tell you, not me. Don't look at me.
It's chance, my dears. Yes, all is chance. Your being there and my being here. All things in heaven and on earth, chance. Chance, all is chance. And so you'll die by chance.
I won't die. I won't die, mister. Please. Please, let me out of here.
But, my dears, why be afraid? The one that lives, my bride, a calm and peaceful, happy existence. For, as you know, I'm really a very gentle man.
You devil, you.
I'll go to my homeland, and there I'll sit and play my violin. Oh, so sweetly and so gently.
I want to live. I've got to live.
And the one that dies, quick, sudden, complete oblivion. So why be afraid?
Mr. Boyd, Mr. Listen, I'll marry you.
Oh,
sure, sure, I don't want to die. You hear me, Mr. Boyd, I'll marry you. Marry
oh, no,
you.
Then you'll
Mr.
kill
Boyd,
me.
Please, will you
I'll
please
marry,
marry
you, mister. I'll marry you,
no,
sir.
I'll marry
Mr.
you.
Please,
stop.
Marry me.
Stop.
You marry me?
Now you're making me angry. I don't like loud talking. It isn't good for me. I've been alone too long. Loud talking hurts my head. Why did you do it? Why?
You see what you did? You made me raise my voice, and that isn't good for me. Oh, no, it isn't. Now, where was I? Oh, yes, flattered as I am by your eagerness to marry me, most regretfully I must refuse. Chance must pick my bride and the bride of death. Here, see, a coin. One chooses heads and one chooses tails. We'll let chance be the chooser.
No.
Quickly, choose. Please don't make me angry. Choose. You, little one, first. Will you choose?
Tails.
And that leaves heads for you, eh, Dot, my little friend?
Heads.
Chance, chance, all is chance. So one of you flip up a coin? No. No, I think I will myself. High in the air. There. That does it. Land flat in the palm of my hand. Heads or tails? My bride or the bride of death?
Oh, Laura.
No, 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 don't touch her. Let her lie there. Poor little child. Couldn't stand the strain of waiting, now could she? How unfortunate.
Is it heads?
Oh, we must have patience. I'll hold the coin here, flat inside my hand, until your friend recovers. If she lost, it wouldn't be fair to kill her while she's unconscious now, would it?
Yes. It hits.
Oh, there's no doubt about it, Jim. They're drowned, the both of them.
I should have had more sense than to let them have the boat. A couple of city kids like that.
Now, Jim, don't blame yourself. This water's treacherous. Look where the bottom of the canoe stove in. They must have hit a rock and gone right over.
Yeah, neither one of them could swim. They told me that. Oh, this is an awful thing to happen.
Hey, did you wire the sheriff?
Yeah. I will as soon as we get back. Come on, let's keep on going downstream. We've got to find him.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, what's that?
What?
You hear it?
Oh, that. You mean that fiddle playing?
Oh, I know. That's old man Boyd. Lives a couple of miles up through the valley. At least I think he does. I've never been up there, though. The wind makes it sound as if that fiddle's right here.
Yeah.
Well, how about going up and talking to him? Maybe he saw him.
No. He's way off in the woods. He wouldn't see him.
Well, anyway, let's talk to him.
I tell you, it's no use, Fred. They're drowned, and that's the end of it. Downstream, that's where we'll find their bodies.
At least let's go talk to him.
Why waste the time?
Well, they might have wandered off.
Oh, don't be a fool. Look at the canoe.
Well, at least let's go talk to the guy.
It's a couple of miles over there.
I'll tell you what, we'll flip for it.
Huh?
Heads, we'll go up there. Tails, we'll go downstream.
Okay. You got a coin?
Yeah. Yeah, here. You flip.
Okay. There.
What is it?
Ha-ha. Tails. Well, we save a 2-mile walk.
You gotta tell me, is it heads?
Patience, my dear daughter. You must have patience. Oh, Laura's waking up. Yes, open your eyes, Laura.
What?
You fainted? Yes, my dear, you fainted. Help her to her feet, Dottie. Help her to her feet.
Come on, Laura. Oh.
Now then, we're all together again once more now, aren't we? You're feeling quite well, aren't you, my dear?
What
was Chance's verdict? Oh, don't worry. It's all quite well.
I live?
Oh, no, the coin is still inside my hand. I waited for you.
Oh.
I knew you'd like it better that way.
Stop torturing me. Tell me, is it heads? Is it heads?
Tell us, please, tell us.
Now, you've made me quite angry. I told you not to shout at me. Very angry, yes, indeed.
Mister, tell us.
All right. My fingers cramped a little bit from holding them closed so tightly, but now we'll see. Well, interesting indeed.
Which one is it? Which one?
Remember, I promised one of you the happiness of being my own dear bride.
Yes. Which one?
And remember, I promised the other one would have extinction, quick and sudden.
Oh, which one?
No. Let me ask, which one of you chose Tails?
I did.
Then die.
Oh, no need for tears for her, my dear. She died quite gently. No, enough of tears. For since she's dead, it's you who will be my bride.
No! No, I won't! I won't!
There is no choice. Chance was the chooser and you the winner. I'm a man who always goes by chance. Now get up to your feet. This one is death's bride.
No!
You make it all quite difficult, you do. Why do you persist in making me angry? Chance, all is chance. You'll be my bride. We'll be quite happy in my homeland when we get there. We'll pack, get to the seashore. No. First, I'll play for you. I play so well now, don't I? Softly. Doesn't the music creep inside of you like long, thin snakes? Oh, what a lonely man I was. Strange thoughts twisting in my head and no one to tell them to. But now I have someone. My thoughts, your thoughts. Yes, your thoughts. And I'll watch the snakes twist in your brain.
I can't stand it anymore.
Now you've made me very angry. I won't play for you again. I won't. And crying loudly, too, when there's no reason. The marriage will be quite legal on shipboard. Shipboard. Yes, shipboard. I told you we must hurry. The rendezvous. I've been waiting for months. If we miss this, there'll be no more, and I must get back. And that reminds me, there's something I must tell you. Yes, tell you, because I try to be a fair and gentle man. Come, over by the fire. Come, I say. There. Just light enough. Now come into my arms.
No.
Into my arms, I tell you. There. Close to me. My little bride-to-be. Yes, I shall tell you everything. I suppose you wonder why a man of all my talents and education hides away in this forsaken place for all these months. Well, you shall know the reason. Look at me. Look. Closely. You see, my dear, I had a little accident. I haven't got a face.
Hey, Fred.
Yeah?
There's something I want to tell you.
Yeah, Fred. I know. Shouldn't let him have that canoe.
No. It ain't that fella. It's the coin we flipped a little while ago.
Well?
I gypped you, Fred.
How?
Well, it wasn't tails, it was heads. You won. It's been kind of bothering me, Fred. Come on. Let's go back upstream and talk to old man Boyd the way you said, huh?
Oh, Mr. Obler.
All right. I want to say something very quickly to the radio audience. Ladies and gentlemen, believe me, the story you just heard was just a story intended purely for amazement and amusement. The young ladies were purely fictional characters, and the villain existed only for the brief space of the 29 minutes during which you listened to the play. So stop breathing hard, permit your blood pressure to follow its normal, healthy rate, and as soon as Frank Martin tells you about a certain matter, I'll be back to tell you about the fast one.
Friends, don't forget now. If more vitamin B and iron is all you need to help build yourself up, then try ironized yeast tablets. Remember, if they don't quickly help you to eat better, feel more like your old-time peppy, happy self. Yes, and if you're not convinced that ironized yeast tablets can help you gain the pounds you need to look better and feel better, the cost of the first package will be refunded to you in full by the Ironized Yeast Company, Box IY, Rahway, New Jersey. Ask for ironized yeast tablets by their full name, and make sure you get what you ask for. Ironized yeast. Now, what about next week, Mr. Obler?
Well, it's a mystery story. An amazing series of crimes and hit-and-run accidents which take place in different parts of a certain city, miles apart at the same moment. No one sees the autos strike the victims, no one sees the criminals, there are no clues, and yet the dead litter the streets. But that story is next week.
Lights Out will come to you again next Tuesday at this same time. Be sure to listen to Arch Obler's weird story of The Fast One. And if you need more vitamin B and iron, be sure to try ironized yeast. The one and only ironized yeast. With the big letters IY on the package and on each tablet.
It is later than you think.
This is Bela Lugosi, welcoming you to Mystery House.
Mystery House, starring Bela Lugosi. Mystery House, where live again the stories of the greatest mystery theater the world has ever known, the Grand Guignol of Paris. Mystery House, where tonight the distinguished actor John Carradine joins Bela Lugosi in presenting The Thirsty Death.
Good evening, folks. This is Ken Carpenter. If I sound a little nervous, it's not really my fault. I'm usually a pretty steady guy, calm as anyone, but, well, this is asking too much. Bela Lugosi alone is enough to scare you. John Carradine isn't exactly soothing to your nerves, but put them together in a story set in darkest Africa with mad dogs howling in the background and, whew, well, find out for yourself.
Curtain rises on The Thirsty Death, starring Bela Lugosi and his guest at Mystery House, John Carradine. You hear those native drums? You know what they're saying? Eve Pazanda does. That is why her heart is pounding to the mounting cadence of those ceaseless drums. That's why she's hurrying faster, faster, hurrying through the North African forest in the oppressive heat of this humid afternoon. And that is why Malad, her native houseboy, follows unwillingly, his eyes rolling fearfully in their wide sockets.
Malad, faster. Walk faster.
Missus, please, better we go by.
Don't talk such nonsense.
But, Missus, Thirsty Death walks. All around us is Thirsty Death. You hear, Missus? Do you hear?
Oh, stop gibbering like a frightened child. Anyway, we've gone too far to turn back now.
No.
We're almost halfway to the village.
No. Better we go back. Better we... Oh, go back.
Malad, don't leave me here alone. Let me in. Open the door and let me in.
Eve, it is you.
Rene.
Couldn't believe my own ears. Come in, come in.
Oh, I had no idea this was your house, Rene. I knew you lived somewhere near here, but...
What happened?
I was on my way to the village when Mallard, my houseboy, became frightened and ran away. There was a mad dog somewhere near.
Well, so I have something to thank the epidemic for, after all. Who would have thought back in Paris that we should meet again like this?
Oh, Rene, please.
Yes, forgive me. I was so taken away at seeing you. But sit down. Let me pour you some water.
Oh, thank you.
Here, drink. Nasty, you make yourself ill.
More, please.
Well, a little more will be all right, I suppose.
I never knew before what thirst could mean.
Imagine those poor devils out there, hundreds of them, who have hydrophobia. Whatever induced you to set foot outside your door?
Oh, it was foolhardy of me, I know. My husband had to leave for the coast. We gone at least a week, and the prospect of being shut in all alone, except for my terrified houseboy.
Yes, the natives are in a dreadful panic. My own houseboy, Gildas, ran off and deserted me yesterday. But you say you were on your way to the village.
Well, that's you know the Chabours. I was going to stay with them until Francois, my husband, returned.
Eve, are you happy with him?
Him? You mean my husband? Of course we're happy, very happy.
Then why, when I first learned who the new doctor and his wife were, did you send back word by Gildas that I would not be welcome in your home?
Because
you were afraid that seeing me might rekindle our love? Wasn't that it?
No, Rene. Because Francois is such a jealous husband.
Middle-aged men with beautiful young wives usually are.
I'm rested now. I must be on my way to the village. If I'm to make it by nightfall.
But you can't go out there again.
I must. Oh! Rene, you loved me once.
I love you still.
Then go with me. Take me to the village.
Very well. But you're still tired. Rest a bit longer, and then we'll stop.
Strange, isn't it, Rene?
Strange. And doesn't it prove something to you, Eve? When you sent me away back there in Paris, because your parents wished you to marry this Dr. Plassant, I chose the farthest, most inaccessible, most uncivilized spot I could think of.
Yet here I am, too.
Eve.
With my husband.
Does he know that you were once in love with another? With me?
With another, yes. I'm not sure. Oh! Those dogs!
You said one spine a-tingling. I'll have my gun, of course.
Hydrophobia turned him into such a snarling, howling, frothing beast that they had to smother in between two mattresses.
Oh, it's a ghastly disease. And yet there are fools, criminal fools, who refuse to obey the order that all dogs be killed. I didn't hesitate to kill all four of my pets. Eve, why do you suddenly look at me like that?
Oh, nothing.
There's a dog in your home, isn't there?
Yes.
But that's sheer folly.
Francois refuses to do away with him. That's another reason why I couldn't bear to remain home. I was afraid.
What manner of man is this husband of yours?
He says he needs the dog for experiments. Please, Rene, we mustn't delay any longer. It gets dark so suddenly out here.
Very well. I'll get my gun.
Rene.
What's the matter?
Somebody's outside.
Probably Gildas, that poor houseboy of mine, coming back at last.
No,
it's... Eve. Who was it you said you saw just through the windows? Why do you?
My husband.
Your husband? Not what you said.
He mustn't find me here, Rene. He's so insanely jealous, he'll think he mustn't find me here.
Wait, go upstairs. There's a bedroom.
All right.
Who's there? Oh, good evening.
Good evening, monsieur. I'm Dr. Plaisant.
Oh, new doctor. Well, won't you come in?
Thank you.
I am René Bramant.
Yes, I've heard of you. I think that back in Paris we had a mutual friend.
You must be mistaken, my dear doctor. I am from Marseille.
So, you are an obliging host.
Your health, Dr. Plaisant.
And yours, Monsieur Bremont. Splendid liqueur. I must say, a comfortable place you have here.
Thank you, doctor.
This, I presume, is your living room.
It's a very small place.
Just the kind of place that would appeal to my wife. We're thinking of building next year, and if you don't mind, I like to take a look at the bedroom.
No! That is, I'd rather you didn't.
Oh. The bedroom is occupied, perhaps.
Of course not. I'm here all alone.
Then?
Well, doctor, I might as well confess.
Yes?
Gildas, my houseboy, deserted me yesterday.
Well,
the bedroom is in a frightful mess. I must ask you to wait until some other time to see it.
Hmm. As you wish.
Now, doctor, at the risk of seeming a rude host, I must remind you that it will soon be dark.
You think I should be on my way?
After all, Dr. Poisson, you of all people should be aware of the menace that lurks in the forest. There's still mad dogs loose and after dark.
Oh, yes. Those mad dogs. And me, completely out of serum.
Out of serum? Good heavens! Can't you get some more?
The whole district has run out. I intended leaving for the coast today to get a supply, but...
Yes?
But something very significant came to my attention. So I sent someone else.
Doctor, it's such a long trip. Why, this means that for at least a week, every case of hydrophobia in this district must necessarily be fatal.
Yes, monsieur. What ghastly cases we had. Death so horrible that even I, who have seen so much of death, was utterly revolted.
And yet you are so righteous to keep a dog in your own house.
What's that, monsieur? What's that? You know I have a dog? Then she told you.
She? I don't know who you mean.
Who told you?
Gildas, my houseboy, Gildas. You know how these natives chatter. He heard it from your houseboy.
A most unusual servant, that Gildas. First leaves your bedroom a frightful mess so that I can't see it. And now he tells you about a dog.
Dr. Poisson, you must do away with the dog. It's too dangerous. Why, just think, if your wife...
Your solicitude for my wife's safety touches me deeply, Monsieur Clément. Too bad she couldn't be along with me on this prison.
Yes, it is.
But perhaps we shall all three be together quite soon. Goodbye, Monsieur.
Goodbye, Doctor. Yeah. Eve, you can come down now.
Oh, Renee. Oh, I was so frightened. I can hardly stand.
Pale as a ghost. Here, sit down.
I thought he'd never go. When he asked to see the bedroom.
Eve. He knew you were here.
You think so?
His very manner in asking to see the bedroom. And his reaction when I forgot myself and spoke of the dog.
Yes, yes. I tried to tell myself otherwise, but I know it's true. Didn't he even speak of a mutual friend in Paris? He meant me.
Of course.
He knows we were once sweethearts. And now, the way things happen...
Don't, Eve, don't. I can't bear to see you like this. What if he does know? You've done no wrong. God knows you've been a faithful wife.
But he... I told you how jealous Francois is. He'll never believe the truth, never.
What kind of a devil is he? That you should cower and cringe before him.
Oh, you don't know what he's capable of.
Then why don't you divorce him? You don't love him, you never have.
He'd never consent to a divorce. He's told me so.
Then leave him anyway. Eve, darling, come away with me. Come away to the other end of the earth. I'll make you happy, I swear I will. Everything we once hoped and dreamed together.
Oh, Renee, don't, please. You're only making me feel worse. As long as I'm his wife, I couldn't.
Yes. I suppose I knew that.
Look, night has closed in already. We've got...
Eve, what's the matter? If I hadn't caught you then, you'd have fallen.
Oh, it's just nerves. I'll be all right. We've got to start for the village at once, Renee.
But you're in no condition to ever make it here. Do you realize how far it is?
Yes, but I...
Those mad dogs prowling in the blackness of the forest?
But I can't stay here.
Why not? You can have the bedroom upstairs. I'll sleep down here on the couch.
Do you think he'd ever believe it?
Listen, I have an idea. Why didn't I think of it before? Some friends of mine, an elderly couple, have a place down by the river. I'll take you there at dawn. They'll say you were here all the time.
You really think they will?
Positive, indeed. We were probably wrong about your husband knowing you were here. We just imagined things. Everything's going to turn out all right.
Renee! Renee!
What is it?
What's the matter?
Oh, Renee! Oh, I had such a terrible nightmare.
I woke up screaming.
Poor thing. Why, you're actually trembling.
What time is it?
Well, as a matter of fact, we'd have had to get up soon anyway. It's just about dawn.
Well, then if you don't mind, I'll go back downstairs with you. I hate to be alone.
Sure thing. I'll start right in fixing breakfast.
I had a restless night, too. Wouldn't be a bit surprised if I was going to have another bout of malaria.
My head's spinning. And I ache all over.
Sit down. I like the lamp.
It's too... it's eerie black.
Oh, here's a match.
Oh, there. The light from the lamp makes me feel better already. I can almost laugh at my horrible dream now.
Was it about the dogs?
Yes. About the little dog Nero that my husband refused to kill. I dreamed it. Right before my eyes, the dog changed into the shadowy figure of a man.
No wonder you woke up screaming.
But that was only the beginning of the dream. It seemed to me that I woke up there in the bedroom upstairs, and the shadowy figure was leaning over me. I was so paralyzed with fright I couldn't move.
And then what happened?
And then I heard this thing go out of my room and close the door. Then it seemed to me that I lay there an eternity, trying to scream but unable to utter a sound. Finally, I found my voice.
Eve.
Rene, you do look ill. I hadn't noticed before how...
Eve, I had a strange dream, too. I also dreamed that a shadowy figure was moving about in here.
No.
Then I dreamed the figure went out and barred the doors and windows from the outside.
Rene, look. The windows are barred.
Yes.
Quick. The door. Test it.
Still be ringing. It can't be. It's true. The door is locked and barred from the outside. Whoever you are there, open the door!
We've got to get out of here! We've got to get out of here!
Well, I hope you're not frightened yet, because this isn't anything. Wait till you hear Bela Lugosi and John Carradine in the second act of The Thirsty Death. And wait till you hear those howling dogs.
We left Eve Pleasant and Rene Bremond beating senselessly on the barred door. The barred door which keeps them prisoners there in the Subramon's lodge, remote in the North African forest. As we return to them now in the ghostly dawn, they are still hammering their fists on the door in a fit of panic, still shouting hopelessly for help.
Stop, Eve! Stop! Stop it, Eve! We're behaving like panicky children. We've got to be calm. We've got to think this thing through like rational human beings.
Calm, Rene. Rational?
Yes, of course. We wake up and find the door and windows barred from the outside. Now, is that any reason to give way to terror?
Shadowy figure, Rene. He must have had a purpose. A ghastly purpose.
Nonsense. He only existed in your imagination. And I dare say you transplanted him to mine. For all we know, Gildas may have done this just as a joke.
You don't really believe that, Rene?
Certainly I do. Or if it wasn't Gildas, maybe it was some native with a twisted sense of humor.
Oh, Rene, we've got to get out of here.
Naturally, and it shouldn't be very difficult if we use our heads. Now then, let's see. Why, of course, I have a hatchet over here in the drawer.
Oh, Rene!
Go on.
Rene, he took it. Whoever locked us in took it.
Now, don't get hysterical again. I can always fire my revolver, and maybe it might help that way.
Well, then hurry, hurry.
See, the cartridges are over here in the other drawer. No.
Cartridges. They're gone, too.
They're gone, too.
Rene, the door. Somebody's there.
It's opening. Dr. Pleasant.
Good morning, Monsieur Bremond. And Eve, my dear wife. Aren't you happy to see your devoted husband again?
You locked us in, didn't you?
Yes, it was you.
Stand where you are, monsieur. I shall feel impelled to use my gun.
Dr. Pleasant, what sort of comedy do you think you're playing?
A romantic one, but only as a supporting player. I'm sure you'll be the first to admit that.
Oh, no, Francois. It isn't true what you're thinking.
We can explain everything if you'll only give us a chance.
I'm sure it would be a most ingenious alibi.
You blind, stupid, jealous fool. I demand that you let us out of here at once.
Let you out? Oh, no. I couldn't do that. It would be criminal.
Criminal?
Decidedly, you are dangerous.
What riddles are you speaking now?
Not riddles. Facts.
Oh, you've gone mad. Completely mad.
No, my dear wife. I'm not mad, but unfortunately, it will soon be impossible to say the same about one of you.
What?
Which one?
Me?
Perhaps. And then again, perhaps it is she. Who knows?
What are you talking about?
Tell us what you have to say and be done with it.
Very well, Monsieur Bremont. Remember telling me that I ought to have killed my little dog.
What about it?
I have been forced to follow your advice, Monsieur. You see, the dog had become rabid.
Oh.
But what has that to do with us?
Patience. Patience. What will interest you particularly is that last night, after I killed the poor dog, I filled my hypodermic needle with its saliva.
With its saliva?
Yes, its saliva, brimming with hydrophobia. Then I came back here. Came back all the way to the forest. I came back with my hypodermic needle.
That was really you. You that I saw leaning over my bed.
And then you injected the needle into me. You monster! You infected us both!
No, no, not both. Just one of you. Don't you remember my saying?
I have only advice.
Was it me?
Or me, in the name of heaven, man!
Very soon you'll find out. But very soon the one who is infected will begin to feel symptoms. You're quite unmistakable, I assure you. First, just a general feeling of sickness, steadily growing worse.
And I'm the one. I woke up feeling ill.
And what about me? I thought it was malaria.
Next will come that awful, crucifying thirst. And then the final stage, the transformation into a snarling, frothing, howling beast that will bite and tear and stand back, Bremont, or I shoot!
Dr. Pezan, by all that is holy, I swear that we are innocent.
Oh, yes, Francois, yes.
Have you no mercy?
I have only advice. There in the drawer, where you failed to find the hatchet, I left a knife.
A knife?
Not sharp enough or strong enough to tear open the door or window bars, however, when the mad person attacks the healthy one, the knife will prove useful.
Goodbye. If we only knew which one of us it was.
Not me. He wouldn't have done it to me. He wants me. He wouldn't destroy me. It's you, Rennie. He did it to you.
You're just saying that, Eve. You know in your heart it isn't true. Suspicion has turned his love for you into inhuman hatred. You're the one he'd want to destroy, not me. It's you he's infected. You.
First, just a general feeling of sickness. Steadily growing worse.
General feeling of sickness. Steadily growing worse. What he said.
What's that you're saying, Eve?
Rene, there's no longer any doubt about it. It was me that he infected.
No. It was me. Just as he said, the symptoms are unmistakable. Why should I lie to myself or you any longer? I'm the victim.
You're sure, Rene? You're positive?
Good to God that I weren't. General feeling of sickness.
Next will come that awful crucifying thirst. That awful crucifying.
Rene, where is the water?
Empty.
No.
That devil. He must have poured out all the water.
Poured out all the water. And I'm so thirsty. So horribly, terribly thirsty.
You are? Eve, you are? Then you must be the one.
Water. Water, give me water. I have to have water.
Then, final stage. Transformation of the snarling, frothing, howling beast that will...
Why do you stand there looking at me, Rene? Water! I've got to have water!
There's nothing I can do, Eve. Nothing!
You've got to do something!
There in the drawer where you failed to find the hatchet, I left a knife. When the mad person attacks the healthy one, the knife will prove useful.
Rene! What are you doing with that drawer?
Why, I...
Put down that knife, Rene! Put it away. Put it away, you hear?
Eve, Stay away from me, I warn you.
He's going to kill
Don't
me.
Come a step closer. If you do, I'll
knife.
Have to use this knife.
Get
We're locked
the
in
knife.
Here together, Eve, and there's nothing I can do but use this knife.
Help! Help! Oh! Oh!
Doctor, Doctor, see, I come back.
Yes, madam, you come back.
Mrs., where is she?
I think she is. The home was Monsieur Bremont, where you took her.
Monsieur Bremont? No, doctor. Molly not take Mrs. anywhere. Molly get scared of dogs, run away and leave Mrs. all alone in forest. Come back now to say very sorry.
Don't lie to me. You took her to Monsieur Bremont yesterday. Just as you had probably taken her many times before.
No.
Tell me, Mallard, how much did she pay you for keeping her secret?
Secret? What secret you talk about?
Don't taunt me about. You lie, devil.
Oh.
It won't do any good. I found her with Monsieur Bremont.
Who is Monsieur Bremont? Mallard, not know.
If no. you say that once more, I'll flood you.
Huh?
The game is up. I caught her with her lover and...
Marlin, not know what you talk. Yesterday, Mrs. say go with her to village. On way, dog come. Marlin, run. Leave Mrs. behind. Now, come back to say very sorry.
A very clever story, Marlin.
Yeah.
And who knows?
Yeah.
I might have been fool enough to believe it. If not for this.
Oh, you get letter.
Yes, a letter. Last night, while visiting Monsieur Bremont Lodge, I found it in a drawer hidden under a box of cartridges. It's in her own handwriting.
Doctor, what letter say?
I couldn't bear to read what my wife wrote to her lover. I haven't read it. But I will now. I'll read it now.
This is very good to Marley. Very good to Marley. Doctor! What is it? Why you...
Renee. Everything that once was between us is forgotten and must forever remain that way. Please, I beg you, never come to see me. And if ever we chance to meet, remember I am Madame Pleasant and not the girl who... Oh, dear God! What have I done?
Doctor, where you go?
Quick, Barrett, come! Maybe there is yet time.
Let me out, for God's sake! Let me out of here!
Yes! Quick, Barrett, help me get the door open.
Missus!
How did you expect to find her? So, you killed. I killed her.
I was only your instrument. You gave her that monstrous disease.
Eve.
Look at her now. Your wife. Your beautiful young wife. You and your hypodermic needle. You made her into a frothing, howling, biting...
Listen to me. It's true. The blood is on my soul. She was not a victim of hydrophobia. All that about that hypodermic needle. I made it up.
Neither you nor my wife was touched.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was The Thirsty Death, starring Bela Lugosi and John Carradine with Loreen Tuttle.
What's the matter, Ken? We didn't frighten you, did we?
Well, I'm afraid you did, Bela. That was pretty scary.
Oh, that was nothing.
Nothing?
No! Wait till you hear next week's story. The Grand Guignol play about a woman who was buried alive. And my guest will be the beautiful and charming Simone Simon. Hope you and your audience will join me next week at Mystery House.
Thank you.
Bela Lugosi is currently being starred in a series of Mystery House pictures at Universal Studios. You'll find Mystery House novels on sale at your local bookstore. John Carradine will soon be seen in the title role of Bluebeard. This is Ken Carpenter.
The Price of Fear, brought to you by Vincent Price.
I expect some of you may know of my interest in and love of painting. My wife calls it a passion. Indeed, I have very fond memories of my early years in London when, as a student of art history, I shared a flat in Baker Street with... That's another story. I'll tell you about it sometime. Actually, I paint a little myself, but primarily my interest has always been in buying paintings, some for my personal pleasure, but even more for galleries. Sometimes I've traveled across a continent from one end to the other in pursuit of a painting. In the early days, especially, half the excitement lay in the chase and half in the gamble, the backing of one's own judgment. As you may imagine, this passion of mine has led me to some very strange places, and into situations one would never have thought possible. There was one such situation, so bizarre, so frightening, so disastrous, as to be almost unbelievable. Oddly enough, I was reminded of it only last week when I was driving through Winchester, for it was here, 20 years ago, that I unwittingly triggered off an awful chain of events. I shall call my story Lot 132. It was a cold day, I remember, and probably as much to keep warm as anything else. I'd strolled into a small auction room just off of the High Street. The auction was about halfway through.
Lot 132, a portrait of a man, early 19th century, English school, artist unknown.
I moved forward to take a closer look. The portrait was of a man in a crimson riding jacket. He looked about 45, with black hair, a large, bony face, and small, closely set eyes. Now, at that time, I had an interest in a modest gallery in London, and although this was clearly a painting of some quality, I felt no desire to buy it. Besides, there was something oddly unnerving about that face, particularly the eyes.
What am I bid?
My gaze continued to be drawn to the portrait. It was an uncomfortable sensation.
£15? £15. 18? 18?
And there I was, against my will, bidding for Lot 132. For an unknown man in a riding jacket.
£25. 25.
The portrait was mine. But I didn't have my usual elation about the purchase. I decided it must be my own illogical hypersensitivity to the face that was, well, that was at fault. When I got back to London, I put the painting in a small anteroom of the gallery and forgot all about it, until a few days later, when an old acquaintance, Michael Emsley, called on me.
Oh, Michael, it's so good to see you.
And what a surprise to find you here. Why aren't you in New York?
Oh, that's next month.
I can never give up with you.
How are the children?
Marvelous.
Simon away at school yet?
No. At the last minute, we decided against it.
Oh, why was that?
It's very simple, really. Neither Marion nor I wanted some frosty matron to have the rest of his childhood.
Right. You know, as a foreigner, I've never understood why the English take the trouble to have children, only to banish them for 8 months of the year to some bastille of learning.
Well, Marion's always been opposed to the idea.
How is that beautiful wife of yours?
Beautiful? Actually, Marion's the reason I'm here. She has a birthday soon.
And you'd like to buy her a painting.
That was the idea. something modest, of course.
Oh, yes, of course, of course. Now, but why don't we have a conducted tour? We walked through and talked about the paintings that interested Michael. Suddenly he stopped and said...
That portrait over there.
Yeah?
I don't know. It seems to draw me to it. I must say I don't particularly like the chap's face, but I feel compelled to look at him.
I'd noticed that throughout the conversation of the past hour, no matter where Michael had been standing in the gallery, he turned round time and again to stare at the face.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do know what you mean. I bought it in Winchester last week.
Winchester?
Mm-hmm.
That's Marion's hometown.
Well, then perhaps he's an ancestor.
Vincent, what a good idea.
Sorry, I'm not with you.
Well, she's often said she'd like a few family portraits to sport on the walls.
Oh, I see what you mean. But supposing she doesn't like him?
Yeah, that's a point.
Look here, why don't you take him on apro?
Hmm? Would you mind?
Not at all. I've known you long enough. And so, after we'd exchanged a transaction slip, Michael Emsley took the portrait, promising to give me Marion's answer in a couple of weeks. I must admit, I wasn't sorry to see it go. One evening, about 2 weeks later, I was sitting in my study at home, browsing through a recently acquired folio of early 19th century drawings and engravings. I was delighted when halfway through I turned up an engraving based on that very portrait. What was more, I found out it had been painted by one Jacob Robertson in 1825. He was a painter just now being rediscovered. And the sitter was identified as Nathaniel Jeremiah Blackwell, 1782 to 1830, cloth merchant. The name rang a bell, but that was all. I was about to telephone Michael the news of my discovery when I noticed the time. It was almost 10:30. Well, I don't know about you, but I dislike being disturbed by the telephone after 10, so I decided to leave the call until morning. So the next day I called the Emsley household.
Yes?
Michael?
No, sir.
Oh, could I speak to Marion, Mrs. Emsley?
I'm afraid not. Would you mind telling me who you are, sir?
I didn't recognize the voice, but, well, very briefly I explained who I was and about the whole portrait business.
You say you're a friend, Mr. Price?
Yes, yes.
How long have you known them, sir?
Oh, about 7 or 8 years. Why? Who are you?
Chief Inspector Lowther, sir. Murder squad.
Within minutes, I was in the car, heading for the Berkshire village where the Emsleys lived. All I could think about were the words, murder squad. What in God's name had happened? My heart was pounding as I drew up at the house. Chief Inspector Lowther met me at the door.
Come into the sitting room, please, Mr. Price.
Oh, my God, Inspector, this room, it looks as if it had been ravaged by a madman.
Madman's the right word, sir.
Well, the Emsleys, Michael, Marion, where are they?
Mr. Emsley's at headquarters, taken into custody.
Custody? Why?
He gave himself up, Mr. Price. What? And Mrs. Emsley's dead, sir. Murdered.
Murdered? But what about the children? Oh, for... Please sake, Inspector, where are they? Let me take them. Let me look after
They're
them.
They're dead too, sir.
At this point, I felt physically sick. My knees seemed about to give way, so I sat down in the only chair left undamaged. As I did so, I noticed lumps and streaks of blood spattering the walls, the curtains, and the carpet. The inspector must have thought I was going to pass out because he poured me a brandy and we went outside into the fresh air. Gradually, he told me the details.
It happened about 10:30 last evening, sir. It seems that Mr. Emsley, for no apparent reason, suddenly went berserk and attacked his wife with a hatchet, then threw her body into the swimming pool.
But, Inspector, it simply can't be true. Marion, he adored her. The children, what happened to them?
Poison, Mr. Price.
Oh, my God.
Weed killer in their milk. Forensics say they were both dead by 9 o'clock.
Did Michael Emsley do this, too?
I'm afraid so, sir. It's just about the most hideous murder I've ever known.
After that, the inspector questioned me about Michael. But not being a really close friend, I couldn't tell him very much, except that he was... Well, he was the gentlest of men and appeared to be completely devoted to his wife and family. There seemed to be no clue to this sudden, unaccountable violence. When I spoke a little later to their old housekeeper, Mrs. Thomas, the poor woman looked deathly white and was clearly distraught.
I keep telling them how kind he was, but I don't think they believe me. There was nothing cruel about Mr. Emsley.
It was you who raised the alarm, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, Mr. Price. I heard this strange sobbing noise, you see. More like an animal in pain.
What time is that, Miss Thomas?
Oh, must have been about midnight, sir. So, well, I jumped out of bed. And
together.
A thorough...
By the swimming pool, sir. But it was too late to stop anything, Mr. Price. He'd already thrown poor Mrs. Emsley's body in.
Yes, yes. But look, did he try to attack you?
Oh, no, sir. Crying like a baby he was. And when he saw me, see, he told me about the children.
Yes.
Oh, my poor little loves. Oh, it's all my fault, Mr. Price. If only I hadn't let him take up their bedtime drink.
Well, didn't he usually?
Oh, no, sir, no. I did that, you see, always. But last night, he insisted.
Insisted? How do you mean?
Well, he fairly snatched the mugs off the tray and told me to get out the way.
Well, that doesn't sound like him.
Oh, no, sir, it wasn't, but... Well, he had been a bit funny for about a fortnight.
Funny? You mean bad-tempered? Then?
Yes, yeah, with the children and with Mrs. Emsley, sir. Oh.
Well, perhaps he was worried about his work.
No, I couldn't say that, but I know Mrs. Emsley was worried about him. The way he'd sit in his study for hours, just brooding, not himself at all.
And he'd been like this for about 2 weeks.
Just about, sir. Oh, dear, I can't believe it, Mr. Price, I can't believe it.
Before leaving, the inspector reminded me about the portrait. When he saw the transaction slip, he suggested that I take the painting back with me to London. It was hanging in Michael's study. For a moment, we looked at it together.
A thoroughly evil-looking so-and-so, isn't he?
Evil. That was it. I didn't know that you could actually smell evil, but you can. That study stank of it. Nathaniel Jeremiah Blackwell seemed to dominate us, and I felt an aura of what I can only call satanic triumph emanating from that canvas. But I tried to put this down to imagination and my own wretched state of mind. As I left the house, the police had started to empty the swimming pool of its red water. It was a sickening sight. Within hours, the portrait was once again in the back room of the gallery, and although privately I decided either to lose it or even destroy it, I said nothing to my partners. I could hardly tell them that I destroyed a painting of quality simply because I had a feeling about it. The next morning I flew to New York on my prearranged business trip, and a month later I found myself in a library in Washington, D.C. Idling away an hour or two, I I came across a newly published encyclopedia of criminals and criminology. Flicking through the pages, I found this entry. Nathaniel Jeremiah Blackwall, 1782 to 1830. Hanged in London for the murder of his wife and children. Brutally assaulted wife with hatchet, throwing body into river. Poison put in children's gruel, nicknamed Killer Satan. So that was it. Blackwell's evil. It must still be alive. How else could one account for Michael Emsley's behavior? But despite instinct, I couldn't logically dismiss the possibility of coincidence. However, I didn't intend to take any chances. That portrait had to be destroyed. Immediately, I cancelled all further engagements, and the next day flew back to London. Can you imagine my horror? And on arrival at the gallery, I found the portrait had been sold 3 weeks previously. I had to work quickly. The record showed it had been bought by a Peter Smythe living in Haywards Heath. I telephoned and spoke to his wife, telling her that there had been some confusion over the portrait, that my partner was unaware that I'd promised it to another client.
Do you want to buy it back, Mr. Price?
Mrs. Smythe, it would save me a great deal of embarrassment if that were possible.
Well, so far as I'm concerned, by all means. I can't stand it. It gives me the creeps.
What about your husband?
Well, he seems quite fond of it. It's hanging in his study.
I see. Do you think I have any chance of persuading him to part with the painting?
You could come over and try, if you like.
Thank you. This evening?
Yes, but could you make it about 8:30? I'll have got the children to bed by then. We'll have more of a chance to talk.
Yes, I understand completely. 8:30, then. Thank you, Mrs. Smythe. Goodbye. Coincidence? Imagination? I couldn't take the risk. This time I had to back my instinct. I had to get to the Smythe house before the children were put to bed. I arrived at about 8 and left the car parked outside the front gates. As I walked up the long drive, sheer natural curiosity urged me to peer through the window of a small garden shed. Standing on a workbench was a large tin, clearly marked weed killer, poison. I quickened my steps to the house. Approaching the front door, I could now see the gardens which lay at the back. When I saw a large ornamental fish pond, my stomach turned over. Weed killer? Water? Coincidence again? I rang the bell.
Good evening. You must be Mr. Price.
Yes, that's right. I'm sorry I'm a little early.
Oh, that doesn't matter. I haven't quite got the children settled yet, but do come in.
Thank you.
Actually, I'm rather glad you are early.
Oh?
I haven't had a chance to tell him about this portrait business yet, but I'd like to explain about my husband.
Well, is he ill?
Oh, no. No, not physically, but he's, well, he's become depressed. About life in general, so he may give you the wrong impression.
But how do you mean?
Well, he's always been such a happy, easygoing person. No temperament at all, not like me.
And he's changed?
Oh, yes. Yes, totally. He's moody. He's irrational. And he's never been bad-tempered with me and the children for no reason. But now...
Miss Knight, how long has this been going on?
About 3 weeks. I can't understand it. It happened almost overnight.
3 weeks, I see. But does he want to talk about it? I mean, communicate?
Oh, no. No, that's just it. He takes himself off to his study and sits there for hours, alone.
Well, perhaps he's overworked. Maybe he needs a holiday.
Oh, we tried that a week ago.
Was he any better?
Much. But within a few hours of being home, he was just the same. Oh, I'm so worried about him. Do forgive me, Mr. Price, letting my hair down to a complete stranger.
Please, not at all. You've actually been a great help. If there's anything I can do...
Well, as a matter of fact, I hope things may be improving.
Oh?
Yes, just before you arrived, Peter insisted he took the children's bedtime drink to them. He almost threw me out of the kitchen.
Mrs. Smythe, where is he now?
He's in the kitchen making it.
The kitchen door opened and Peter Smythe walked out, carrying a tray. There were two mugs of milk on it. I knew that I had to stop him, so I edged to the foot of the stairs. Quickly, I thought, if I held out my hand as if to shake his, I could easily send the tray flying onto the floor.
Darling, this is Mr. Price. He wants
to... Get out of my way.
How do you do, Mr. Smythe?
Oh, you stupid bloody fool.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, what must you think of me?
Oh,
please.
Please, it was an accident.
Damn you, give me.
Damn you, damn you.
May I help clear up the mess?
No, really, I'll do it.
So sorry, Mr. Smythe. Look, I know this is hardly the time, but I really must talk to your husband about that portrait.
Yes, of course.
Where did he go?
Into the study. The portrait's there, too.
Thank you. We crossed the hall to the study. The door was closed.
Darling. Darling, someone to see you. Peter?
Peter Smythe was sitting at the desk, his back towards us, staring up at the portrait of Nathaniel Blackwall. In a second, I recognized the same smell of evil in that room, and I suddenly felt afraid.
Peter, do you feel all right?
He sprang out of his chair and turned to face us. In his hand, he held a small hatchet.
Peter, what is...
He moved swiftly, like an animal around the desk.
You bitch! You whore! I hate you!
Peter! What's the matter with
quickly,
you?
Quickly, I moved between him and the desk, and standing behind him, grasped both his wrists.
Whore! I hate
you! Peter, please!
He struggled with me, but I clung on. Finally, I managed to wrench the hatchet out of his grasp. As I swung round, my eyes met those of Nathaniel Jeremiah Blackwell, and in a split second I knew either that portrait must be destroyed or we should be. His evil was still alive, dominating, commanding. Then Peter Smythe, with a lunatic strength, threw himself at me. I shouted to his wife, "Hold him! Hold him! Keep him back! It's the portrait! I must destroy that portrait! Hold him!
Hold that!
You fool! Leave that portrait alone!"
Peter!
Stop it!
Gripped his hands around her neck. Quickly, I struck at the portrait. With the first blow, Peter Smythe released his wife, cried out in pain, and reeled around the room. I struck at Blackwell's eyes, his nose, his mouth, his chest. I felt possessed, overwhelmed by anger and hate. But Smythe, his strength ebbing away with each blow, began to whimper like an animal. Finally, the picture cord gave way, and Nathaniel Jeremiah Blackwell slid to the floor.
Oh, Peter! He's dead!
No, Mrs. Smythe, he's not dead. Just wait a moment. Be patient.
We must get a doctor, quickly.
No, there's no need for that. Your husband has simply been released.
Oh, Peter. Oh, thank God. Oh,
darling. What happened?
You...
Nothing happened, Mr. Smythe. Oh.
Will he remember, do you think?
Only as one remembers a nightmare. At first, a few details will remain clear. Then gradually, in time, all will be forgotten. And by you too, Mrs. Smythe.
I haven't hurt you, have I, darling?
No, my love. You haven't. Not you.
What strange powers a painting can have. Sometimes good. But in the case of Nathaniel Jeremiah Blackwell, evil. Hours later, after I'd burned what remained of the canvas, I told the Smythes the whole story. There was one thing I didn't tell them, however, but I'll tell you. When the portrait crashed to the ground and Peter Smythe lay exhausted in his wife's arms,
I noticed the vermilion paint of Blackwell's hunting jacket had come off the canvas and lined the knife edge of the hatchet. That was understandable. But why had so much appeared on my hands and streaked my wrists? Old paint should flake or powder. But this was wet, very wet. When I washed my hands a few moments later, I knew why. It wasn't paint. It was blood. Do any of you listening at home have portraits hanging on your walls? Are they of unknown cities? Be careful how you look at them. You never know. Goodbye.
That was Vincent Price bringing you The Price of Fear, with Elizabeth Morgan, Douglas Blackwell, and Alexander John. This story, Lot 132, was first recounted and dramatized by Elizabeth Morgan and produced by John Dias.
Massachusetts. Come in, Dunwich.
Good evening. This is Henry Armitage. I'm speaking to you. Dr. Rice, please close the window. I'm speaking to you from my laboratory on the slopes of Sentinel Hill near Dunwich, Massachusetts. Present with me is Dr. Warren Rice, my distinguished colleague from Miskatonic University. We are now about 100 yards from the summit of the hill, which is crowned by a huge table-like stone set in the center of a circle of stone pillars, a place of prehistoric worship. A moment ago, you may have heard the dogs of Sanich Township barking as we have heard them for 3 days and 3 nights. Dr. Rice and I know the horror which their barking portends, but the purpose of this broadcast is to make this unbelievable horror believable to you. I hope for your sakes and ours we are successful tonight. It is the eve of All Hallows. Tomorrow will be too late. Our time tonight is very short, so I'll speak only of those more recent events which, believe me, may culminate at any moment in a climax too frightful to wholly contemplate. I will begin with the birth of Wilbur Whateley. It was the night of February the 2nd, 1921, Candlemas. Toward dawn, when Lavinia Whateley, a deformed albino woman about 35 years old, gave birth to her dark, goatish-looking son in the crumbling Whateley farmhouse northeast of the village. No one attended her. No doctor or midwife. No one was with her, except her aged, half-insane father, who was known as Wizard Whateley. So Wilbur came into this world under heaven knows what incantations, what appeals to what powers. A week later, Wizard Whateley drove his sleigh into Dunwich Village and reported the event to a group of loungers in Osborne's general store.
Hey, your grandson got yellow hair like Lavinia Wizard?
No, it's after his father more. Doc, you never spoke of who his father might be now. You know his father when the time comes. Oh, Lavinia's read and seen some things the most of you only talk about. Calculate her husband's as good as you can find this side of Aylesbury.
We don't be nosy, Wizard.
Maybe it weren't in no church that none of you heard of. You wouldn't ask no better church wedding than Lavinia's.
Why didn't he tell no wedding, Wizard? When was that?
Not a wedding you'd hear of, Corey. Not a husband you'd hear of, neither. But let me tell you something. Someday you folks will hear a child of Lavinia's calling its father's name on top of Sentinel Hill.
Prophecy? Or idle boating by an insane old man? I know I ask a great deal when I ask you to believe that the arrival of an infant into that house of dire poverty and squalor could possibly constitute a horror and a threat to all our known world. Yet it has an earthly history. Perhaps through this history, you will be able to give it credence. Wilbur Whateley's growth was uncanny. But even if he had been an average child, he would have become, in time, an unnatural being, for he was surrounded from the first by the most malign influence. There was his grandfather, old Whateley, Wizard Whateley, who each Halloween climbed Sentinel Hill to the great circle of stone, and while the hill shook, stood holding a great book open on his arm and shrieked into the wind. Shrieked!
No! Jump off! No! Jump off! No!
Yog-Sothoth, that dreadful name, first mentioned in the hideous forbidden book, the Necronomicon. And this Wizard Whateley was Wilbur's teacher. The villagers began to notice curious things that were going on at the Whateley farmhouse. Soon after Wilbur was born, old Whateley began to remodel the house. The abandoned upper story was restored, and all the windows were tightly boarded up. And then, wizards began to buy cattle in large numbers, both horses and cows. Yet the livestock on the farm didn't seem to increase. Young Lem Brown was one day curious enough to creep close to the house to count the Whateley herd.
Dr. Armitage, there weren't more than 12 cows, and them six looked like they had the blight and funny wounds on them, like cuts. I heard something, too, in the top part of Wizard's house, something like water slapping inside, only seeds like a seed.
One other person went to the Whateley farm in the years before I met Wilbur, Dr. Ken Houghton of Aylesbury, who was called by Wilbur himself and said that his grandfather was dying. Dr. Houghton found the old man in a bedroom on the ground floor and Wilbur with him, while outside the window, a legion of whippoorwills cried loudly and rhythmically, endlessly. Wilbur spoke about the sound.
Whistling time with his breathing now. They're ready. Listen, Doctor. They know his soul's going out. They're waiting.
Yes, Wilbur, that's an interesting superstition. Late in the year for them, too.
When he goes, if they catch him, they'll keep laughing till break of day. If they don't catch him, they'll quiet down.
You mean you believe that... In just a minute. I think he's conscious.
Yes, the birds changed when his breathing changed. Like
Willie,
I say.
Willie!
I'm here.
More space, Willie. Remember, more space soon.
Yes, I'll build it.
New grows, but that grows faster. It'll be ready to serve you soon, Willie.
I know.
But remember, when it's time, you open up the gates to Yog-Sothoth with the long chant. The one on page 751 of the book. But mind you, feed it enough. Because if it gets out before you open to Yog-Sothoth, it's all over. It's no use.
He's going now. He's dead, Wilbur.
The bird. They didn't get him. Yes, he's free. He's gone.
It was the winter following Wizard Waitley's death that I first met Wilbur. He came in person to the library at Miskatonic University to consult a copy of the hideous Necronomicon, which was kept there in its Latin version, as printed in Spain in the 17th century. I tell you, when he came into my office, I was appalled at his appearance. 8 feet tall, shabby, dirty, bearded. But I was even more appalled by his voice when he spoke to me.
I wrote you a letter a month back, Doctor. I wanted a loan of the book.
Well, that's a book that's never loaned from this library. I doubt if it is from any library.
Well, I have to see it then.
Very well, it's kept right here. As you know, there are only 3 copies of this book in existence. That's why we're careful. Here, you can look at it on this table.
Wizard said it would be on page 751.
What? What is it you're looking for?
The formula, the long chant, the one that opens the gate to Yog-Sothoth.
I felt a wave of fright as tangible as the draft from the tomb. It seemed somehow like the spawn of another dimension, like something only partly of mankind, linked to black gulfs beyond all spheres of force and matter, space and time. Presently he raised his head and spoke again.
It's here all right, but I'll have to have a copy.
Oh, that paragraph there? Oh, I don't
Do
know.
You know Latin, Doctor?
Yes, certainly.
Then read it, Doctor. Let's hear how you make it out.
All right, that shouldn't be difficult. Let's see. Nor is it to be thought that man is the oldest or the last of Earth's masters. The old ones were, and the old ones shall be. Not in the spaces that we know, but between them. But only Yog-Sothoth knows the gate. Yog-Sothoth is the gate to where the old ones broke through of old. Their hands are at your throat, yet ye see them not.
Dr. Armitage, you see, I reckon I've got to take that book home. There's things in it I've got to try, and you can't hold me up.
No, I'm sorry.
I tell you, Doctor, I'll have the book sooner or later, no matter what. waiting for me at home. Won't wait much longer.
It was a week later that I was awakened suddenly by the fierce yelping of the great watchdog on the campus, followed by a sound from a wholly different throat, a scream. And I knew instantly that Wilbur had come back for the Necronomicon. I hastened into my clothes and rushed across to the library where a crowd had gathered before the smashed window of my office. Inside, there was a fearful groaning and growling, and some instinct warned me that what was taking place there was not for unfortified eyes to see. I brushed back the crowd, motioning only to Professor Rice to come in with me. When we opened the study door, Professor Rice screamed.
No, Dr. Armitage, no, I
come
up.
Come, close the door. Can't let them see. Goodbye.
Lord, what a
job that dog's done. Turn him to bits. Horrible sound, that moaning. Suppose we ought to call a doctor?
A doctor? A doctor for that? No doctor in the world would know what to do for that. Look, Armitage, it's not human, nor animal. Where did it come from? Can you tell me? Can you tell me what it is?
No, I couldn't tell what Wilbur Whately was. The thing that lay half bent on its side in a pool of greenish-yellow stickiness was 9 feet tall. And the dogs had torn off all the clothing and some of the skin. It was partly human, beyond a doubt. With very man-like hands and head, but the torso and lower parts of the body were fabulous. The chest had the leathery hide of a crocodile or alligator. But below the waistline, the skin was covered with coarse black fur. And from the abdomen, long greenish-gray tentacles. The limbs terminated in ridgy veined pads that were neither hooves nor claws. And as Dr. Rice and I stood staring at this presence, the whippoorwills began to cry in unison outside the study window. And then the thing on the floor roused and mumbled.
God. 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 God.
Listen.
The whippoorwill. Listen. Dead now.
Look. Look, Rice. Look what's happening. He's disintegrating. Come on.
Ah, too. Fading away. He isn't made of matter as we know it on Earth. I guess he took after his father, so there'll be nothing left.
His father? What was his father?
I daren't think. I thought then that what came into our world with Wilbur Whately left with him. I forgot what he himself had told me of it, which was waiting in the sealed house Wizard Whately had built, where the cattle were driven to disappear. But Wilbur Whately left a diary, written in a strange alphabet resembling Sanskrit. And I worked off and on for weeks to decipher it. And finally, I read the following passage written by Wilbur when he was no more than 8 years old.
That upstairs is more ahead of me than I had thought it would be. It is not like to have much earth brain. I can see it a little when I make the sign or blow the powder of Evangatze at it. And it is like them I see Halloween on the hill. I wonder how I shall look when the earth is cleared and there are no earth beings. Maybe like that upstairs looks, which has no body, even fed with all the blood.
One morning, in a cold sweat of terror, I called Dr. Rice to my house and told him, we have to destroy what's in that farmhouse.
Why can't we just leave the thing locked up there? The house is watertight.
Yes, if you think boards will hold it. Don't you realize, man, it hasn't been fed? It hasn't had blood since the 18th of September, when Wilbur Whately came here to die. We left for Dunwich that night, and we've been here on Sentinel Hill ever since, working desperately to discover the formula in time. But a week ago tonight, shortly after dawn... Yeah, hello?
Dr. Armitage, this is Lem Brown. I was just up beyond the glen, Doctor, looking for cows I lost last night.
Yes, Lem?
Well, Doctor, something's been there. Smells like thunder, and there's prints in the road. Great round prints, big as barrel heads, like an elephant has been along.
Anything else, Lem?
That's all I see. Except bushes and trees pushed back from the road, like a house was drug along.
Did you hear anything?
Yes. Long toward morning, I heard a sound over toward Whately's place. A kind of ripping or tearing of wood, like a big box was being opened up. Chancy, you heard it too.
Lem, who lives nearest the Whately farm?
Why, that'd be Elmer Fry's place.
Well, he's on this line too, isn't he? Hang on and I'll ring him.
Yes, Dr. Armitage, this is Central.
I'm trying to get Elmer Fry, Central.
Doctor, he must be out somewhere. His whole family. I was ringing there an hour ago. Earl Sawyer saw Elmer's cows, Sam Peter, at Cold Spring Glen.
Oh, you didn't get him. All right. But if you hear or see anything more, let me know. I'll be here working all day. Rice! Rice! Wake up! It's loose. It's out of the house. One family gone already. Have to work. Pray God we find that formula in time. A week since it broke loose. A week of terror and panic here in Dunwich Township. Each night it moves about the countryside, leaving the trees crushed in a 30-foot swathe, as though by a moving mountain. Leaving its monstrous tracks and a trail of tarry stickings. Leaving crushed and gutted farmhouses and whole herds of cattle drained of blood. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is the story to this moment. And tonight is Halloween. Tonight we are here to... Just one moment, please. Dr. Rice, did you hear something?
With the window closed, no.
Well, throw it open. Listen. Sound from a thousand bending trees. Sound like the sea moving across a forest. Yes. Yes, it's coming here, of course. All Hallows, it comes to Sentinel Hill. Dr. Rice, I'll try the formula and the powder from the altar stone. I want you to stay here at the microphone and report what you see.
Very well, Dr. Armitage.
Oh, wait a minute before I go. To any scientist who may be listening to me, if I fail, there is a possible alternative formula in Falconer's Mystical Formulae of the Middle Ages on page 24. There are the whippoorwills. I better get out there. Take over, Dr. Wright.
Yes. I'll do as well as I can, Armitage. Good luck. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Armitage is climbing to the top of the hill, to the altar stone. I can see him plainly, for the moon is high and the night clear. Down the hill, toward the dark village, I can see the grasses and shrubbery bending down, marking the monster's ascent. It moves quite fast, and I feel the proximity to phases of being utterly forbidden. Now, Dr. Armitage stands now on the altar stone, and is holding the powder which, if the books are correct, we'll make this thing for an instant visible. It is quite close to him now, perhaps 20 yards or less. He lifts his head. He flings the powder in a wide arc. They can see. Oh, no! No!
Dr. Rice, come in, Dunnage. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your suspense announcer. Due to conditions... Oh, just a moment, please. One moment, please. Dr. Rice, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Yes, for a moment I was overcome when I saw... Ladies and gentlemen, perhaps you can hear now the incantation of Dr. Armitage. Listen. Wills mean death. And Dr. Armitage is walking back here now. So we know that whatever it was, it is gone. It is dead. We can be thankful indeed. You see, I saw Dr. Armitage.
Yes. Did you? Did you see it, Dr. Rice?
I saw it, Lord, yes.
What did it look like to you?
It looked here like something made of squirming ropes, but bigger than a barn and shaped, well, like an egg, and dozens of legs like barrels that half closed when it stepped, and nothing solid about it, and at least 15 or 20 mouths or trunks opening and closing. But what was it?
Oh, kind of force. A kind of force that doesn't belong in our part of the place. Did you notice the half face on top?
Half face. Like a human face.
Very large, but yes, quite human. And quite like Wilbur's, like all the waiters.
And it was...
That's right, it was Wilbur's twin brother. And you saw what 3 weeks' growth had done. And it was the child of Lavinia's who called its father's name on Sentinel Hill, as Wizard Waitley prophesied. You heard it calling, Yog-Sotho. Ladies and gentlemen, this night is over. It is All Saints' Day. May heaven bless us all.
The Dunnage Horror, with Ronald Coleman as your star of Suspense. This is the Armed Forces Radio Service.
Have a good evening and come back again next week. This has been Bill Holwig from West Texas for Broken Sea Audio Productions. www.brokensea.com. Good evening. Good evening. The music for tonight's episode was composed by Brian of Seraphic Panoply and Stevie Farnaby. Starring Draven Schoberg and Kyra Greenfield, my awesome granddaughter, and Paul and Damaris Mannering.